PFT Media.
This is The Experience with Chris Fio. In each episode, Fio brings his unique and unashamed interview style to Central Florida. He conducts honest and open interviews with people that have the vocabulary and expertise that he lacks.
In this episode of The Experience, Chris talks with musician Anwar Superstar, an artist who shared the mic with legends like Pharoah Monch, Talib Kweli, and the Chemical Brothers. They talk about life, children, and he's one hell of a vegan baker as well.
Gun in a holster, that vision is slipping like a worn transmission. The days of transporting and not transmitting, cause the transcontinental flow got me transient. I ain't transcribed the transcript, I fell in a trance and let the translation transfix. I done transcended the hood, I'm translucent. Every time they think that I'm good, I drop new shit. Through the transition, I transform like Optimus. My glasses always half full, and I can transfer from the peacoat to the fur, but I prefer to keep it kind of close to the curb.
Hello, this is The Experience with Chris Fioravanti, and today I have with me Anwar Superstar. Hello, Anwar. How you doing?
Yes, sir. I'm well, man. Everything's great, right?
Wonderful right now. So how have you been in your daily life? What has Anwar been up to?
Oh, man, I'm just a suburban dad, man. 100%. Yeah. Like, everything else is, like, secondary to me being a suburban dad. It used to be in reverse. You know, before I had my daughter, I used to just be, you know, business first. And then after, you know, I had my daughter, I still was kind of focused on business and I traveled a lot. And then I realized I was missing some things. So I really am just like a dad first, and then I pay the bills, and then anything else that I want to do, you know, recreational, I do like afterwards. But I'm not really that much into it, man. I lived a crazy life up to this point, so my day to day is just like suburban dad.
I respect that a lot, man. You know, it takes a lot nowadays, you know, especially for us, you know, our generation, to just do something that noble, because most of the time they just want to do partying and, like, you know, like you said, do other business. And right. Could you elaborate on that business that took you away from being a suburban dad?
Well, first, you know, I had a company. I started my own company with my brothers. What I did was I started out as a booking agent for my older brother. And we, you know, basically booked his shows. And then I moved on from there to producing my own shows and having my own events, you know, domestically, internationally. And then from there, I went into consulting and, you know, but from the beginning, when I was booking and then I was promoting and producing my own events, I had to travel to those places, you know. And then, you know, working with my brother, he's all over the globe.
Yeah.
So, you know, I might have, you know, 2-3 weeks that I need to do in Europe, which doesn't seem like an extended amount of time, but if you have a, you know, 1-year-old child, you know, you can miss walking, you can miss first words, you can miss a lot of that kind of stuff. You got a 4 or 5-year-old child, and then you're missing, you know, first days of school and da da da, depending on how that schedule lines up. So yeah, when I was working in that fashion, you know, it took me away from that. Now, you know, what I do is more home-based, so I don't necessarily have to leave the house to do those things, but I also homeschool her. So, you know, I'm a math and science teacher from 9 to 12. So
that's,
you know,
really cool.
Yeah, so I'm up pretty early, man. I'm up about 5 every morning, you know, planning out my day.
Amazing.
Yeah, well, no, man, it's normal now. It's like I plan out my day so that I can attack it, and I have business I have to do before I start homeschool, and then do more business.
So what type of business do you do now?
More consulting work now. You know, I still do some of my own events, but more or less, you know, people who are younger in this business, in the entertainment industry, I usually try to just give information that I have or put people in the right positions to make money. And then when they make money, we both make money together as opposed to me charging people to do something.
That is really cool. And is that a part of your motivational speaking? Because I heard about that.
No, that's actually a separate thing. The motivational speaking for me is because I come from, you know, an inner city situation where, you know, life expectancy for a person, not even just like on record, but for you as a person, you might not feel like you're going to make, you know, 21 years old or 25 years old. And I lived that kind of a life when I was younger, thinking that I wouldn't make it past 25. Like I would never see 25.
Can you describe the feeling of that mindset?
It's nothing to it. It might sound like to someone who has never felt that way, it might sound like almost irrational, but in reality, it's like, if that's your reality, then for you, it's nothing like strange about it. It's just normal life. Like, people around here are dying young. I might die young. That's just a reality of what's happening here. And it was a free way of living because I didn't have anything stopping me, because I was living every day to the max, thinking any of these days could be my last. So you really are just living to the tilt. And it wasn't until I got past 25 and I was like 26, 27, 28, and I started to realize, like, oh, well, you can still be here. Like, and then with my brother, you know, being a celebrity, even in my early 20s, I was able to see things and learn things that I was able to implement as I got into my later 20s. And I try to talk to kids and let them know, like, their reality sometimes is skewed by limitations of view. So for me, it's just broadening that view and letting them know, like, hey, gather as much information as you can. Don't ignore information because you don't think you're going to be alive. Take in the information, because when you realize that you are going to be alive, that information is going to be valuable in you changing the circumstances that you're in.
That's a truism. That's a very big truism. And I'm very happy to hear that you're doing that for the youth nowadays, because our youth nowadays, the news, you hear about Mac Miller dying, you hear about Triple X, the way he died. You hear about a lot of these young people just going off like that. And how does that hit you now when you see stuff like that?
Well, I mean, for me, it's, you know, obviously it's a terrible circumstance, you know, for, you know, not just, you know, the person who's no longer with us, but also for his family, his loved ones, people who may have experienced something, a moment, unfortunately, a shorter moment than what they probably expected when it happened, but experienced a moment with somebody, you know, seeing them grow, seeing them achieve, and seeing them have those things and acquire, not necessarily monetary things, but acquire a certain love from people for what they do, for sharing and things of sort. So you always want to see that person where they can take it. So when that's cut short, that's obviously a terrible thing. And then, you know, that's in the case of like like Mac and Triple X and recently Nipsey Hussle. It's like when you see people who may have the ability to change the course of not only their lives, but other people's lives that are, who may be fans or things of sort, you always want to see that actually come to fruition. And you don't want to see them become tragic stories, because, you know, then people, you know, they mourn them and things like that, but they don't necessarily take that as a cautionary tale and try to pick up where they left off and take it to the next level. They usually just fall off with whoever they were following. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand.
And I think that's a terrible situation to have, you know. And it also speaks to even situations with Mac Miller, where it was more of a, what they say is, you know, he committed suicide. You know, with them saying that, you know, that's also something to me that I always try to get to the youth to understand, is that people who don't have money think that money is the solution. And that's only because you have an experience that you know that money is not a solution. Money is only good for options, right? So if you have a hole somewhere in you that hasn't been filled, money can't fill that hole. Like, there are things that have to be done, and there are people that have to be around you to help you understand that and get you the help that you need. And a lot of times we have people in positions who are successful people who are doing well, and we see all of that, and we may not glorify, may not be the right word, but we put the focus on their achievements, and we never really get to know that somebody's struggling, you know. And then you got people who are struggling, and we think that it's good because they have money, because we think money solves everything. And then something like that happens, and it's like, oh, wow, how could he? He had such a great life, when that's not necessarily, money doesn't make life great.
And that's true, too, because I've noticed that a lot of people don't want to. It's almost like they tell you, oh, tell me what your problem is, you know, open up to me. But yet they don't want to hear it. Like, it's almost, you see that on Facebook where people post their problems and they either get no feedback or negative feedback. What do you have to say about that? Why are people like that?
I don't know. I don't think that's social. Well, first off, people on social media are not necessarily qualified to give any kind of, you know, real valuable medical analysis on, you know, any of these conditions that people, because, you know, depression is a sickness. You know, a lot of people are self-medicating. And when you get into self-medicating and you get down a slippery slope, and a lot of people are now, you know, turn into social media to kind of vent some of their frustrations. But I don't think that social media is set up to have, like, everybody that's on your friends list isn't your friend. Like, you might have, you know, I don't know, 500 people on your friends list, 1,000 people, whatever it is, right? But you don't have 1,000 friends. You don't. Like, nobody has 1,000 friends.
No. Born at all,
right? So what you think is that these are 1,000 people that have like interest, right?
Yeah.
All right, sometimes I'm you know, a bit of a asshole, so they might have that same tendency. So now when it's on me, instead of it's just me and you in a room and I'm being a dick to you, it's now 1,000 people that are like being a dick to you. You're like, no, but it's serious. No, it's not time for that. So I don't, you know, I never post any of my business on social media. None whatsoever. Those people are my friends. My friends I can call and talk to. You know, that's not a place for that. I mean, that's become commonplace to do, but I don't believe social media is a place to get, you know, help.
True. Very true. And it's caused, in my opinion, it's caused a lot of exacerbation of depression and anxiety. Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm 100% agree with that. I mean, I think social media can be good for certain things, but now I think it's become a place where people go, like, you know, to draw some comparison. Before social media, like, they would say, like, you know, if you went to school and there was a kid that was a bully in your school, they would say, like, oh, that he's being a bully because he's trying to hide something. You know, he's trying to take the attention off of him. And the way he's doing that is by becoming more and more violent towards you. So you can't ever point out what he feels like are his shortcomings, or you have to face whatever that's going to be. Well, now that's social media. Like, social media has a lot of people with a lot of problems, personal problems. And the way that they're dealing with that is by lashing out at you for putting your problems up there. So if I was getting bullied in school when I went to school, might have been getting bullied by a kid in fourth grade. Really? And it might be one kid in that class, or in fifth grade, one kid that's bullying me. And that's a tough thing to have to deal with, right?
That is a very tough thing. I was
bullied. But now if my daughter, who is in fourth grade, is getting bullied, it's online, and that might happen with daily 1,000 people constantly doing it. That's a very different thing to have to deal with. Now, people say social media is a choice. You can turn it off. You can do this or that. And that's true. But for her, who's grown up in this, where we play video games on a video game, or you rode bikes outside, this is a different circumstance for them to be in. So it's easy to say that they can't, or they could just turn off social media, but it would be a like saying, hey, you don't have to watch TV. No, you don't. But it's kind of part of society at this point.
It is, and it's ingrained in our new generation. You know, us, we didn't grow up. We're the last generation to grow up without the internet.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's a real shocking thing to see people, you know, how much it influences our younger generation. And I believe that, you know, we should be more on the ball when it comes to social media and these things personally. I mean, how do you feel?
I think so, but I also think that social media has actual benefits too. So it's like a slippery slope. It's like, how do you stop people from getting bullied? Well, there's really no way of completely abolishing bullying. You understand what I'm saying?
None
because
at all.
Like I said, there was no social media when I was growing up, but there were still bullies.
Oh yeah.
So it's not like without social media they're going to be. No, that's not going to happen. And social media has been a strong, strong proponent for exposing a lot of things. You know, a lot of, the killings that have happened, young black men and women being killed, without social media to kind of push some of that agenda forward, some of that never comes to the forefront.
That is true.
Some of that information is not readily made on CNN, Fox News, da da da. You don't see that kind of stuff. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you would never even get that information or be able to have the movements that you have. So there's some positive aspects to it. And it's great for business if you're on there for business. There are a lot of people on social media who have made a good living for themselves that they would not have had that same opportunity if they didn't have an opportunity to tap directly into whoever their fan base is. So there's some good to it.
Very true. And on the flip side, I want to ask you, since it's your father and your kids go on social media, right?
Somewhat.
There's, you know, does it worry you that there's such a quick access to, yes, good things, but also the those stories about the killings? Does that worry you that the very young kids see that? Does that worry you in any way?
I can only speak for myself.
Okay.
As a parent, I'm almost transparent to a fault with my daughter, giving her truisms about what's happening daily in society.
I respect that.
And of course, I give it to her in a 10-year-old, 9-year-old, 10-year-old way. But I let her know what's happening. I'm more concerned with not necessarily that they're accessing violence, so to speak. Because most of the kids who are seeing that or accessing that are experiencing a certain form of that. Like, you kind of, like, social media is set up with an algorithm that kind of seeks out what you're actually looking for. You know, so whatever those things are that you constantly do are going to arrive. So if you're constantly looking for that, then I would say there's something that's happening that's drawing you that way. So it's not going to stop that from happening because you're seeing something off social media that's making you click something on social media.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? And
yes,
they're just putting more of it in front of you, more of it. But you've already tapped into something that's bringing that forth. With mine, I don't really, you know, encourage her to be on social media. And I help her understand that what that is, you know. So I think that it starts with parents kind of, you know, letting their child or children know exactly what this is. Like, what are you dealing with here?
Yeah.
And I think that then when they see stuff, then you're able to explain it as opposed to them, you know, observing it and then trying to make their own rationale of what they're seeing constantly.
Yeah. That I feel that's a very big thing that all parents should be doing. And it's sad when I see parents leave kids unattended with electronics or on Facebook unattended, and it just worries me that will create some complexes later down the line mentally. And do you believe that it could cause complexes like that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But again, I think that comes from, like, what foundation do they have before they get there? You know what I'm saying? Like, my daughter asked me, what do I think about her outfit? And I would tell her, well, what do you feel about it? Because it doesn't matter what somebody else thinks. If you like what you're doing, do that. But I've done that for her whole life, and I'm constant with it. So when she's on there, if somebody doesn't like something, she doesn't care because she likes it. So, you know, building that kind of a foundation, I think. Now, that's not going to be foolproof, but it's a good jumping off point.
It's a very good start, you know, empowerment and, you know, love yourself above anybody else, which is, you know, almost feels like a lost sign nowadays, or lost truism nowadays. Like, people like to be in a codependent relationship. Have you noticed that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, as humans, we need nurturing. So, you normally, every relationship is codependent.
True, very true.
You know what I mean? It's like there's some give and take, and you're there for a reason. Like, you're trying to gain. There's something there that you're gaining from that relationship, or you're not having a relationship.
Yeah, very true. And how is a date would be with Anwar? How would you view a date for you? Like, how do you approach that nowadays?
Like going out on a date?
Yeah, like if you were to go out.
Well, it would be like I would turn to my wife and say, hey, would you like to go out and eat?
How long have you been married with her?
We're going on 9 years now. So
congratulations, man.
Yeah, I mean, we've been together 13 years, but, you know,
what's the secret to making something like that work that long?
I just think that the secret is communication. And that, I mean, that sounds really simple, but it's a very difficult thing to do. Like, we communicate what we want to communicate. That's not actually communication.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, you have to be open and you have to be honest and you have to be willing to accept, you know, the critiques and criticisms as well as the praise.
Yeah. How hard was it at first, like, you know, when you really started getting serious? Was like, because was there a 2 year rough patch, like they say?
Like when we first got
when you serious.
I mean, yes. Oh, I mean, it's there were like rougher times because we come from two different places. You know, it's not necessarily like environment. I mean, we're from the same city, but we come from two different places. Like, we see in the world two different ways.
Right.
So there's things that she sees and how she thinks it should go. There are things that I see how I think it should go. And sometimes it's hard to communicate those things. You know, people usually get frustrated because it's hard to get somebody to understand what you're saying, what you want to do. And it took me a lot to get to a point where I've been making my own decisions for my own life for so long and making all of the decisions to be able to take input from somebody and allow them to also play a role in that decision.
It must have been a culture shock for you a little bit.
It wasn't as much a culture shock as it was I had to take another step in a relationship that I had never taken before. You know, so, but if it was worth the step, then you take it. You know, we have a family, a beautiful family. It's like, what am I willing to do to make sure that that is consistent? That's all it comes down to.
Is that a hard thing to contemplate on?
Not necessarily. I mean, do you have kids?
No, I'm
right. If somebody has a child, then they'll understand. It's like people stay married, they say way too long, and that's because you have a family, and there are repercussions that are bigger than just you not being with somebody. And a lot of times people say they stay too long. And for me, I was like, before we ever get to a point where we feel like you're staying somewhere too long, let's make this a place to stay so that we can feel comfortable about staying longer.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Not agree, but understand where you're coming from. You know, I'm single right now and, you know, no kids. So I want to connect on, you know, with you on that too. You know, try to learn someone who's in a different spot in his life.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's just, you know, you meet somebody and you, if you're serious about being somebody, then you have to weigh the pros and cons. You understand what I'm saying? Like, again, like, it's about communication. You know, people get with people and they feel good about it really fast and this is going really good, but you don't know that person. True. And then as you get to know that person are the things that you love greater than the things that you don't. And other things that you don't are those things that you can always live with. Because that's what it comes down to. What can you always live with? Like, that flaw is going to be there forever. Can you live with it? As opposed to having an expectation that somehow it's going to change. And if you can live with it, then you can be with that person. If you can't, get out of there.
Yeah, true. And I'm pretty sure you had to change a lot, you know, over the 13 years. Because your last song was Left, Right, Left, Right. That came out 2008?
Right. I think maybe Here Comes the Champ might have came out after that.
I've heard that song, and my friends have heard Here Comes the Champ. And when I told them I'm interviewing Anwar Superstar, they showed me the song. They're like, this guy? I'm like, that guy. The very
I put out like independent projects after that, but yeah, so you know, I didn't have to change much, you know, not necessarily change much of who I was, because I don't think that relationships are about changing you as a person. I think that's where you fail in a relationship. I think that relationships aren't about changing, they're about like communicating who you are so somebody understands you. Like, I can navigate it better when I understand what you're doing. Usually I'm frustrated because I don't understand what the hell you're doing right now. Like, what are you thinking? Like, why would you? So the frustration usually hurts, and then people again think that people are going to change. I heard this all the time, like, but we're married now. And it's like, yeah, but that's still a human being. Like, marriage, nothing changed whatsoever. You just had an event. You said some words, da da da. Like, that is still the same human being.
Yeah.
Like, nothing changed after that. Like, oh, now he's got some heightened sense of responsibility. That just not, it's not happening. It's like, if you had a wife that liked the party, like, if she was your girlfriend and she liked the party, and then she was your fiance and she liked the party, when she's your wife, she doesn't now become someone who never liked them. It just doesn't happen that way.
True. There's not some like mystical marriage ghost that enters your body,
right? No, it doesn't. It never. I don't know of it. I've never seen it.
If there is, we need a videotape.
Hey, man, if it is, a lot of people need to get it.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, I've seen marriages after like 40-something years just go down the drain, and
yeah.
I don't know what the explanation for that is. Do you know?
No, I mean, older, like, generations. I mean, I think that the pressures of, man, I think communication was different back then, first off. Like, it was very male-dominated relationship, do what I say, da-da-da. So, over time, you know, once now, that kind of unhealthy power struggle has been curtailed some. I think that women are more like not really into this barbarian move you're doing, like, I'm out of here. So that might have something to do with it. Another thing is, again, like, communication wasn't there, so it wasn't really, you know, like, people really expressing certain things. And I'm telling, like, to me, the best thing you can do in your relationship is communicate. And I'm talking about openly. Like, not agree with somebody, but communicate where your point is and their point. And listen, like, I'm going to tell you, this is what I'm seeing. This is what's going on. You tell me. We don't have to always agree on that, but we have to both know that. And if we both know that, then we can, you know, maneuver accordingly to make things work or find some common ground. Without that, then, you know, you never find, well, I don't really know what you're mad for. I don't really know. You're saying, well, you da da da. But why does that trigger you in that way? Because if I understand that, then I could be like, okay, well, there's something there that, all right, you're not. Let me help do my part then. And vice versa. You know, and I think that's the main point. I don't think that was ever really a strong point in any kind of marriage. It was like, you're married, you stay married, religious reasons, da da da. And now people are like, past that, well, then you're going to have more divorces.
Very much so. And it's gone spikingly up. And I believe that is so because times are changing so vastly. And how do you feel about the changes of the times? You know, kids are coming out younger and younger. You know, there's transgender kids. I'm championing the Zebra Coalition. I mean, how do you feel about
it? I'm not familiar with the Zebra Coalition.
It's a transgender, gay and lesbian youth.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that it was called the Zebra. You know what? For me, honestly, I don't know exactly how I'm feeling. I think it's okay when a child is making a decision, right? And I think that support has to happen regardless. So, case in point, if I have a son and my son is, he decides that, you know, he's not a heterosexual male, he's a gay male. Do I love my son less now? No. And see, that's how I have to look at this through the eyes of myself if I'm in that situation. Because it's harder to do the judging when it's you in the seat. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Very different. You know, like a lot of people are cast aspersions on the youth and what they decide, da da da. But you could have a gay brother or a gay sister and you still love them. And if someone attacked them, you would go to fight for them. So if it's okay to do there, then how is it not okay to do it and like to have that feeling in the arena as a whole? So from that standpoint, yes, I'm for protecting, loving, and, you know, nurturing of all children. Where I do have some angst about what's happening, I feel like I'm unclear on if people are being moved to a place. You understand what I'm saying? So like
forced or coerced?
Not necessarily forced, but influenced into a place, you know. And that to me is a slippery slope both ways, because that I was influenced into being what some people might describe now as being toxically masculine. You know, that's not something I was born with, but it's something I was influenced to. And now people would say that's wrong, right? That's not right to have toxic masculinity for people to raise their sons in a certain way.
Yeah.
Right? And some of that behavior is not good. It's not conducive to anything positive, right?
Right, I agree.
So if that influence could be bad, then the influence on the other side has to be the same, has to be dealt with the same type of care. So from that vantage point, there is some of that I, you know, struggle with from time to time. But again, there are children who feel a certain way, and those children have to be, you know, protected. They have to be loved, and they have to be built up, and they have to see images of people who are in the light, who represent what they feel like they are. Just like anything else, like I need to see positive images of black males in order for me to feel like that's a possibility for me to be in that light. So I think from that vantage point, yes.
I agree with that statement, very much so. And about young black males and the death that's being caused and, you know, certain things about the society nowadays, do you believe that certain aspects of society are holding young black males back?
Absolutely. I mean, that's really like not really a debatable question. Like this is definitely something that has been, I mean, but this, there's ways of looking at this and, you know, making it make easy and rational sense. You know, this was a male dominated country, a white male dominated country. So for the last really 120 years, say, there was supposed to be freedom. Now, of course, for most of that time, there wasn't freedom as far as, you know, actually having freedom to do and whatever. So that's not. And then there was also animosity. As freedom comes and there are people who are experiencing a certain amount of success, well, if you were born in a time as a white man where that wasn't a possibility, well, then there's going to be animosity. And again, it's, you know, you're going to have people who look at it and say, well, there was a time when a white man could do X, Y, and Z, and now he can't, right? So you're going to have people who are going to try to narrow that gap, and you're going to try have people who try to keep it the same, you know? And it's going to be done systematically. The only issue is that most of the people who are trying to narrow the gap aren't in positions of power. So that fight is constantly trying to find allies to take that fight in powerful positions. They don't allow, for the most part, and you could say Barack Obama, but he was a president of the United States, not of the black people of, you know what I mean? So you're not going to have people who are in position normally to fight that fight for you unless you have allies. And it's just, you know, I don't think that either party, Democrat or Republican, really prioritizes an agenda for the young black men, for college black age black men, you know, 20 to 30, or older black men and women. Like, black women are actually doing much better than any group, but still don't have proper representation and proper support from the country for what they do and what they put out. So I think that, yeah, there are things that are put in place, and I think that without having the allies to really get things pushed forward, like I said, with social media and things like this, it gets something rolling. I think people look at it as an opportunity as opposed to the right thing to do. Yeah. You get a lot of politicians hopping on these agendas because it gives them an opportunity as opposed to this is the right thing to do. And I think that, yeah, of course, there are going to be things in place that hold back young black youth. And that's by design.
Yeah, and I agree with that wholeheartedly, because there's just, I see it myself, and I see the different dichotomy between me and some of my friends who are darker complexion, where I could freely yell at a cop. I could freely just say, fuck, you know, F you, you know, you suck. I've done it before, versus my friend who couldn't even do that. You know, he was...
Oh, yeah, that's very different. No, well, I mean, again, that's very different. And a lot of this stuff is, you know, if you do the history and really do, like, some research on where some of these things originate from, even if they've made some adjustments and changes throughout, you know, the years, it's still, you know, born on corruption or born in, you know, injustice and things like that won't stop. You know what I mean? Like, they get better, but they're not going to ever be, you know, 100% like fair, so to speak. Yeah. You know what I mean? Or equal, as people would say.
And you were talking about representation for young black women. Who would you, in your eyes, see as a fair representation for young black women today?
I don't think that there's, like, a single individual. I think that, that question is kind of loaded, because if I say who's a representative for young white women, you could name, it wouldn't have to be one person. It would be a broad brush of women, right? Or you know, who's a representation for young white men? Like, it would be a broad brush of men. You know what I mean? So there's no, like, a single person that you would turn to and say, you know, this is a representation for black women. Black women are, like, so diverse, and, you know, they're very different. You know, they're not like cookie cutter. You know, it's very, very different. So who's the representation? Really, I'm not qualified to say that. It would be a question that would be answered by black women. You know, it's not for me to say, hey, this is a representation for you. Like, that's not how it works. You know what I mean?
They would call I think that would be a part of toxic masculinity. What do you think?
Oh, that might be, right? Like, that falls in line. Like, see, I'm getting better with that. Like, nah, I'm not on the toxic, not on the toxic train. I mean, there are people that, you know, I see, and I might, you know, push my daughter towards, you know, seeing that, you know, historically or presently, and have her, you know, really see and experience some of that. But those are things that, you know, as they happen, I do it. You know, I wouldn't necessarily, you know, say this person's a good representation or that person. There are so many, you know, great women out there, great black women out there doing great things, that it's such a, they have a lot to pick from. You know, the pool is bigger. But again, this isn't, without social media, some of that would never even come out. You know, that's not something that you're going to get on your, you know.
Yeah, the you know, the Channel 9
or TV,
this guy.
The TV's not going to tell you those people.
And that's such an injustice, I feel like. Do you feel like that would change soon? Or how do you view like that?
For me, I don't view it at all. You know, it's like, if I'm focusing on you, then I'm not doing what I'm doing. You know, like, my focus is somewhere else. So for me, I always say, like, you know, some people are, you know, people who bring forth information. And those people are very important. They bring forth the information of what's happening, and you need that. And then there are other people who develop action plans, you know, based off of the information. I'm an action plan guy, so I'm not worried about what's happening, if it's fair or whatever. Okay, if it's not fair, what am I supposed to do now? True. Like, my fight's not to make it fair. My fight is to overcome when it's not fair. That's my fight, though. You know, and that's not going to be everybody, but for me, I can't focus on what I already know as the solution. Like, no, this is what's happening. This is what they're doing. This is how it's going to play out. Now, what do I do from here? Like, I can't wait for it to change or who's going to change it, because there's no incentive for it to be changed in my favor. And I'm not confused about that. The real question is, now what do I do? Now what am I going to do? You know, it could be anybody. That's just the way that I think that you should live. I'm not looking at my problems. I'm looking at my solutions.
That is a good way to look at life. And I agree with that, actually, to be honest. Because a lot of people just, they're buried in their own misery. They like to wallow. And, you know, I try to be an advocate for, you know, do something, just anything, you know, positive. Just, you know, be an influence to yourself. You know, carry yourself with, you know, pride. And I feel like you have that message about you.
Well, I mean, I carry myself. I've been raised in a way. I come from a family, and that's what we do. But at the same time, I'm really just not focused on you. You know, if somebody makes it a black-white thing, if I'm not white, then I can't focus on what's white. Like, I got to deal with being black, because that's what I'm going to be. Like, if I'm dealing with what somebody white is doing, then I'm already not going to achieve whatever. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm focused on what I do and not what you do.
Yeah,
or anybody else, for that matter. It's black, white, indifferent. I don't care. It's like, being a black man, I focus. So I have an unapologetic agenda. That's me making sure that I'm able to do, and those who follow behind me are able to do, no matter what is put in your way. I mean, as I was a sports guy growing up, I wasn't fast. I was slow. I couldn't catch.
What sports did you like?
I played basketball, football, and I ran track. Wow. I was slow. I couldn't catch. I couldn't shoot and dribble. That's where I start from, though. Yeah. Okay, we know those things now. What do you do? And then you work those things. You find out how to overcome that. And once you overcome that, well, there were people that were faster than me when I started. They weren't faster than me at the end. There were people that were better dribblers, shooters. They weren't at the end. There were people, they weren't at the end. So it's not about, for me, again, it's not about what somebody else is doing. It's what I'm doing with my time here that's going to make a difference and make it a better place, as opposed to what somebody is doing to stop it from being a better. I'm worried about that.
That is beautiful, you know. That is a truism, because I always see that a lot. You see people who are just sitting there, you know, they'll talk crap about people they see. And while the person they're talking crap about, they don't even see them. Like, that's not their world. They don't notice them.
Right.
You know, and I believe that, you know, if you're mad at somebody, you make them a part of your life. You know, do you believe that?
Oh, well, yeah, because you're giving energy to it. Like, again, like, if you're giving energy. And again, there are places in an agenda for people who develop and bring forth information. That's important. Again, I'm not against that.
Yeah,
I'm just, all right, this is where I stand. Now what do I do, guy? And there's some people who don't necessarily take that next step. They just talk about what's wrong. I already know what's wrong. It's a shitload that's wrong. Fair. There's a shitload that's unfair. And everybody knows. Nobody's confused. Like, even the people who act like they know deep down inside. It's like, if you asked any white person, would you rather be black or treated like, they're going to say no. So you can say there's no white privilege, but if I asked you if I asked you to be black for the rest of your life, you'd be like, absolutely not. And it's not just because you love being white. You're like, yeah, nah, that's going to come with a bit of, you know, baggage that I don't want. Yeah. Right. So it's like, you know, all of that, you know, taken into consideration, it's like, yo, I'm focused on that. I know what I got to do, and I'm going to do that, you know, and keep creating ways to overcome, like, whatever somebody's trying to stop you, find another way. It's more than one way to skin a cat.
Oh, very much so. And I Got one last question for you since we're coming to the end. What is your next step for yourself? What's the next big plan ahead?
I'm not really sure. I mean, I'm experiencing a few different things business-wise. I'm not really certain, man. You know, I'm looking at new experiences. I live my life in 10-year blocks, so I'm on a new 10 years. And what that's going to hold, I'm actually building it now. And I'm building it conceptually, and then I'll start to, you know...
What's the process behind these, your choices to build this? What's the process?
Where, you know, I'm not where I was when I was 20. So why would I do the same thing at 30 or have the same vision at 30 that I have when I'm a different person now? You know, I maximize what I can in a 10-year block, where I'm at, how I feel, what I'm interested in, what I see, how I feel like that'll be great, how it's going to make me a better person, progress me, how I get to maximize my days in case I die, because that's no days are guaranteed. And I take that in the... So at the end of that 10 years, when I look back, do I look back and say, man, I really did that? Or do I look back and say, you know what, I wish I would have. So whatever I feel, I do. Because at the end of the day, I'm in a position to do that, and a lot of people are, and I don't take that for granted. So when, like, I wanted to live in an art gallery, I lived here. You know, I wanted a house in Windermere, I did that. So in that decade, I did a lot of things I wanted to do. You know, and now it's like, oh, well, what do you want to do? So maybe I want to travel more, you know. Maybe I want to experience real estate, or, you know, it's like thinking of those things. Like, what can you do? What more can you do to have experience that also, you know, can help move forward agendas, you know? So some of that is, you know, how do I, you know, reach more people with positive messages? How do I make it a better opportunity for young, you know, melanated youth in this country or globally? Or, you know, how do I do those things? What can I do? What skills do I have that can bring forth? That's where I'm at now in my progression. It's like, what can I do for other people?
Beautiful mindset to be in, man. I really respect you for that.
I appreciate it, man.
You're welcome, man.
I appreciate you taking the time, too, man, sitting down with me, man. I enjoyed the conversation. You actually asked some questions that some people probably would shy away from. Some people, you know, don't like to get into race questions and things like that. And some people don't want to answer them. But, you know, I don't, like, again, I think communication is the solution to everything. You don't have to agree with what I'm saying. Like, you don't have to agree. But if you know where I stand and I know where you stand, and we can normally find some common ground.
I agree with that. I 100% agree with you with that. And I thank you for the compliment. I feel that, you know, if you don't attack things just directly and wholeheartedly, you know, ask these questions and really, you know, don't have a shame behind them. And just really, there shouldn't be a shame behind asking questions that we can openly discuss. And I feel that there is common ground. And today you said a lot of things that made me smile, I'll personally say. And on that note, this has been The Experience with Chris Fioravanti. Thank you, Anwar Superstar, for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, man. Super duper.
Definitely. Y'all have a wonderful night.
There's no place that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. Just you and me. There's no place that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. Just you and me. There's no place in the world that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. There's no place in the world that I'd rather be than right here, just you and me. There's no place that I'd rather be than right here.
The Experience with Chris Fio is produced by Boris Douglas Garvey and Kai Legal. It is a joint production of Borma, Vonti, and PFT Media. The theme song is You and Me by Anwar Superstar.
A PFT Media production.